You're listening to a 95BFM podcast.
Now it's time to hear from the Green Party's Ricardo Menendez March.
This week marks the start of Hikoi Mote Te Riti, the 9-day-long Hikoi to Parliament in opposition to the Treaty Principles Bill and other government policies impacting Māori. The Hikoi began at Cape Reinga, the northernmost point of Aotearoa, and will continue onwards until the Hikoi reaches Parliament in Wellington. ACT Party leader David Seymour says that the Treaty Principles Bill aims to recognise the rights of iwi and hapū in Te Tiriti o Waitangi, but will include additional clauses that he says ensures that the rights of all New Zealanders are equally protected. However, many critics and Māori say that the bill aims to rewrite and reinterpret the bills of Te Tiriti altogether and will diminish protections to the rights of Māori. I spoke to the Green Party's Ricardo Menendez March to discuss the Hikoi, as well as the party's view on the Treaty Principles Bill. We also had a discussion about the government's apology to victims of abuse in state and faith-based care institutions, as well as the implication of Donald Trump's election victory for Aotearoa New Zealand. Firstly, I'd like to ask if the Green Party supports the kaupapa of the Hikoi and if they will be participating in any way.
Yeah, look, while many of us are holding the fort here in the in Parimata, we've got several of our MPs deployed in the ground to support the Hikoi and to be there with the people who are rightfully calling for Te Tiriti to be honoured. And we absolutely won't be supporting the Treaty Principles Bill. But I think to me that the Hikoi is an opportunity for people to come together. And I think I reflect a lot from, as a tohiwi and a migrant to Aotearoa, how Te Tiriti allows me to be here and ties me to the land in a way that that acknowledges also the role of tangata whenua and the fact that sovereignty was never ceded. And so I look forward to our communities being brought together by this Hikoi.
What are the Green Party's hopes for the Treaty Principles Bill as it goes through its first reading this week?
We hope that the government kills the bill and doesn't allow it to go to select committee. We think that it is important to enable a conscious vote because I think this is a really important constitutional issue that should allow legislators to not simply be acting on party lines and to be whipped into voting, but actually for legislators to exercise the mandates that constituents have given them and therefore that we allow legislators to vote, with their conscience rather than to be whipped on party lines, because this is way bigger than party policies.
What do you think of David Seymour's offer to meet with Eru Kapakingi and the other organisers of the Hikoi?
David Seymour's offer to meet with Eru Kapakingi is nothing more than a stunt when he himself has failed to front up to discuss with iwi, hapu and whānau issues that this government is ramming through and that are deeply, deeply undermining the government's ability to meet its treaty obligations. And so, look, David Seymour's whole rhetoric and pushing this bill is filled with misinformation and attempt to rewrite history. And I don't think the public should be buying a last-ditch performative attempt at dialogue when he's had years to actually have constructive dialogue on this issue.
The Green Party has also written to the Speaker of the House requesting a personal vote on the Treaty Principles Bill. I was wondering if you could tell us a bit about this call and what the outcomes the party expects to have from it.
Well, as I said earlier, we do think that the Treaty Principles Bill is basically a constitutional issue. And we know that actually national MPs have told the public that they do not support this bill. And I know for a fact that in many debates, this was the line that national MPs were using. I think the public deserves better than national MPs trying to uphold coalition agreement while undermining our foundational document. So we think that by enabling a conscious vote on this issue, it'll allow the 123 members of parliament to vote with their conscience and to uphold our foundational document as they see fit. And we think that that actually will enable a much more robust conversation, but also would mean that the bill would not go into the second reading.
All right, moving on to the next topic. As of yesterday, Prime Minister Christopher Luxon, Parliament and numerous public sector leaders have made official apologies to the victims of those abused in state and faith-based care institutions. So firstly, I'd like to ask, do you think that the government's apologies to abuse survivors yesterday was adequate?
But if we center the voices of survivors, many are calling for the rhetoric from yesterday to not be empty and for the government to actually overhaul our care system so that abuse doesn't happen again. And so far, we haven't seen commitments from the government to implement the recommendations to end abuse and care that came from the voices of survivors. So we are definitely concerned about the fact that the government doesn't seem to be listening to survivors and, in fact, is pushing ahead with policies that could entrench harm and the conditions for people to enter state care to begin with.
In line with the formal apologies and in response to the findings of the inquiry, the government announced the introduction of the Responding to Abuse and Care Legislation Amendment Bill. The bill includes changes such as removing strip searches for children in care, strengthening restrictions for people working with young children, giving the chief archivist more powers to enforce better record-keeping amongst government agencies, and amending the Crimes Act to include disability in the definition of vulnerable adults. So I'd like to ask, does the Green Party support the Abuse in Care Legislation Amendment Bill, and do you think it's sufficient enough to stop the abuse of children in care facilities?
So we are supporting this bill to select committee so that it can get the adequate scrutiny that it deserves and so that survivors can actually be centered in terms of whether this bill goes far enough or not. We do have concerns in terms of whether the bill adequately addresses use of force, for example. And so far, we don't think the bill genuinely upholds the voices of survivors and the inquiry's findings. We also think that this is basically a very small step in the right direction, and the government cannot rely on legislation like this to claim that they are responding to the findings when people are calling for things like redress and a complete overhaul of our state care system.
And aside from this bill, is there anything else the government should be doing to prevent abuse in state and faith-based care facilities?
Well, look, I mean, we know that the inquiry's findings made a really strong link between poverty and deprivation and people ending up in state care to begin with. When families are not able to look after their own because governments push them into poverty, that creates the conditions for state care to become a thing and for people to be split from their finances to start with. And so the inquiry's findings make it extremely clear that poverty deprivation must be addressed and that the narratives on how we talk about people in poverty also need to change, which brings into light comments from the Prime Minister calling beneficiaries bottom feeders and the government's cut to benefit increases. And so we've got to make sure that families are in a strongest position to look after their own so that state care is not a conversation to start off with and that we have other more strengths-based systems to ensure that children have access to their culture, to their family, and to their communities.
All right, moving on to the last topic. Republican candidate and former U.S. President Donald Trump was recently crowned the victor of the U.S. presidential elections. So I'd like to ask if the Green Party had any thoughts on this and if you thought there could be any implications for Aotearoa New Zealand.
There will be implications for Aotearoa New Zealand and around the world. I mean, let's start off with the president-elect's climate policies, which are fueled with climate denialism and disinformation. The future U.S. government would supercharge climate change to a degree that will make it really challenging for many of the communities who are already facing displacement and rising sea levels to remain in their communities. What this will require is a global community that holds the U.S. government to account, and well, the future U.S. government to account for their complete backdown on climate commitments. But we also got to take into account how a U.S. president-elect that has run a campaign on scapegoating migrants, trans people, and many others will end up validating and supercharging people who seek to do harm, not just in the U.S., but in other parts of the world. And so I do worry about violence towards minority groups also being exacerbated with a global leader that has basically won a campaign by scapegoating minorities.
Do you think there are any parallels between the U.S. election outcomes and the last general election here in Aotearoa that led to the election of the coalition government?
Well, I think, as I said, the presidential election was run on the scapegoating of minority groups, on climate denialism and misinformation. And we have seen themes like that appear here in New Zealand, where many political parties ran campaigns on trying to rewrite history, on denying the latest evidence that shows that we need to urgently act to address climate change. and undermining civic institutions. And so there are definitely parallels. At the same time, we do have quite different political and electoral systems, but we cannot undermine how there will be ripple effects across the world from the US election, and that will undermine our ability to tackle important issues such as climate change, inequality, and even constitutional issues such as upholding Tiriti o Waitangi.
That was a 95BFM podcast. To hear more, head to 95BFM.com/bcasts.